Sub-paragraph 7, the affected person for that image as the believer, with the word as the believer, as much as this would put the state in a stronger position. Sorry. My thing is that the key performance here should not be the deliverer, but rather the research of a written demand. How would it be? Page 14. Okay. And the amended subsection 7. Okay. That damage. Okay. The affected person for that damage after delivery. Can it engage on whether it would be better to say upon research instead of saying after delivery? I concede this would put the state in a stronger position than would be the case if we leave it as it is. Thank you.
Wonderful voice.
Thanks, Chair. I have the opposite view to that. I would actually say that the purpose of certainly our interventions is to protect the citizen against, especially earlier, the nasty stuff, you know, the worst case scenario. So I would actually say delivery. I think to me the issue is that who ends up having the burden of proof in improving whether it was delivered or received. I would actually say if there's proven delivery taking place, then that strengthens the hands, particularly as somebody that doesn't have access to attorneys, access to courier services. I think I would prefer to keep it that way.
Thank you.
I'm inspired by counsel and Councillor Walters. There's an agreement between this is that does actually strengthen the hand of the after delivery means that the onus of the burden of proof that didn't happen rests on the state other than on the individual. So as the Honourable Walters was saying, it just strengthens the hand of the affected person.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's 15. Okay, and remember, and this is also complicated, and it relates again to the government and constitutional competences. Okay. Sub 2D originally read the period within which the Minister will manage the request by the expropriating authority directed at the Municipal Manager, not also include the period within which the Municipal Manager is required to respond to the request. And on reflection, we felt that with high hand. What if the expropriating authority says to the Municipal Manager, give you 24 hours to inform it? So it's kind of, it could be completely unrealistic. So we prefer to simply remove that. Because what we're trying to do is encourage, as we're compelled to do, cooperative governance between the different fields of government. And you don't want a kind of instruction and an unrealistic instruction to be delivered from one sphere, from national, for instance, or provincial, to a municipal manager. So we suggest just striking out the existing D. Okay, so that's the first issue there. And then the same applies to the original sub 4, particularly the word deemed. We're advised that again offends constitutionality and powers of state government. So that IEPs is great intelligence and what is a competence of local government. Okay. And so it would be problematic. So what we've had is under sub 3, the disadvantage and last subject to section 25, the delivered written response, its written response to the request contemplated subsection 1 to the expropriating authority within 20 days, in other words, the calendar month of receiving the request. So we just cleaned up, we're encouraging, in fact, compelling an interaction when it's property which is in the area of the municipality. We're compelling a cooperative governance arrangement, but also setting a reasonable amount of time within which there must be a response from the municipal manager. But it can't, it's written down in law rather than left to expropriate the authority and decide that it could be 24 hours, whatever. Okay.
Thank you. Shall we first of the block of Honourable Sultan, followed by Honourable Watt?
Thank you, sir. Just go back to the page 56 and the very last 5 words.
Right.
6 words. And future engineering services, infrastructure, housing, and town planning. But I'm really worried about the choice of the word town planning rather than planning. Because this sort of confines us to a situation which no longer applies. Remember, our municipalities now are world to war. We no longer just talk about towns nowadays. We talk about municipal boundaries, rural areas. Municipalities. Then we should remove the word from just planning. In fact, I'll go, which is the reason why I said, let's look at all the data. Look at remove engineering services, infrastructure, housing, and power. We just refer to planning. So that nobody will accept and say, no, this particular service was not covered by the statute. And that's why as a municipal manager, I didn't bother. Because we don't know what other services of the. But if you talk about planning, then we have whatever issue may arise in the future. That was said.
Thanks, Honorable Sultan. The proposal from the department I have is to delete that entire passage. But we heard you, Honorable Voices.
Yes, actually, I also agree with the investments that I agree with them, but I think we must just get that particular wording right. Then, in terms of clause, clause three of section 6, that I have my terminology, where it says within 3 days of receiving the request, I think it ensures in terms of the legislation that communication is yes. And I think in that sense, I think it meets the target. What I'm concerned about is, isn't the intent of this communication to ensure that there's reasonable steps taken by the expropriating authority to minimize any possible negative impact? Shouldn't it be a stronger obligation on the expropriating authority to take reasonable steps beyond just sending a letter to the municipal manager? Well, what happens if the municipal manager sends a letter, say, well, there's no real impact, I'm going on holiday tomorrow. You know, that's their response. That's actually the reasonable requirement we should put on the expropriating authority to ensure that there's not a negative impact. So I would suggest a clause saying the expropriating authority should also take reasonable steps to ensure that no negative consequences in urban planning, housing, etc., take place. So I think there should be a strong obligation.
There's a proposal from the last speaker. Honourable Deputy. Now, thanks to the members for raising the issue. Under 6 sub 1, we agree that it's a bit redundant, also runs the risk of being a list that excludes things unintentionally and so on. So the suggestion we've got is municipal planning. So may have an existing and future municipal plan.
Okay.
We're happy with that, and I'm glad that Senator Sultan is happy with that.
We hear also what the Honourable Walters is saying. We think that if you go back to page 11, at the beginning of chapter 3, so 5.1, when a property is required for a public purpose and the public interest, an appropriate authority must, amongst others, ascertain the suitability of the property for the purpose for which it is required. We think that that begins to cover the issues that you're raising. In other words, what zoning is there is what we want to do with this expropriated property. Is it an area that is zoned for slightly different purposes, not for industrial purposes or whatever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we think that already, although that's still quite general, we're scared of the over details for the same reason that Honourable Fulcani in the later clause is saying that the danger of being over prescriptive. So we think that general application, if it's a municipality, one of the things the expropriating authority we're nudging him to do is to before even interacting with the municipal manager formally through the letter, they interact with him informally. It's part of the investigation is to just ascertain, okay, ESCOM wants to put up a power station here or something, but how is it being zoned in the planning or whatever of the municipality? So, okay, so that's the information. So we take the point that we would refer you to that and hope that without being over detailed, that's what we're trying to get to, because we agree with the thought behind what you're raising. Thank you.
Thanks, Deputy Minister Honourable Ward.
Chair, again, I think I'm taking perspective. If 20 years from now somebody reads this, you know, presumably they will interpret it in the same manner that we intend here. The Wiring Act, the clause that was referred to, the suitability of purpose, in my mind, it would be in the minds of the expropriating authority, this is suitable. And it doesn't go far enough to ensure that it doesn't cause a disruption of service every government's configured. What you want is expropriation to be part and parcel of cooperative governments, joint planning. I'm not sure whether it will be read like that, the way that the Deputy Minister described it now. It's already been referred to in page 16, on the page of the intent of ensuring that there's no conflict with urban planning there. The changes are going to be made in the decision that we are under discussion at the moment, or whether the changes might get made under page 11. I do think it needs to go a little bit further than just looking at the suitability of purpose. I think it needs to look at the impact, potential impact that it could have on, as described, as we said, existing future engineering services, infrastructure, housing and municipal planning. I think a clause of some nature, looking at beyond the suitability of purpose with the impact. I do think we'll add that to this legislature, and I do think there's a bit of a gap there.
Thank you. Deputy Minister. Can we try out an addition? So we are page 11, 5.1. There's an A, suitability, B, existence of registered and unregistered, and then a C. So we're really going to say impact on municipal planning, but hang on. A municipality might appropriate national property. So if we just say impact on plant, I'm not sure if we don't specify whose plan. So, we do want to address this issue because we're not in disagreement about on the principle. It's finding a language that meets the test. We don't want to say that on planning, but what are we talking about? Media 24 is planning? No. Hopefully not. The good is planning? No, hopefully not. No one heard that, okay. So, state entity.
we flag it and maybe just take a little bit of time? If we're sympathetic to it, and rather than kind of in a sort of hurried way. So if we can come back to that. Right? Because we are very good principle with the issue. Yeah. Okay, now I have a lot of my text. I think I have 16 now. Okay, so this is now intention, the notice of intention to this program. And what we've introduced in the middle of page 16 is really to try and overcome the dangers of property being frozen in an awkward situation to the detriment of particularly the intended, the party that is intended for expropriation. So there must be some indication. Okay, so what did we do? E, the estimated date of expropriation. So this is the notice of intention, and the notice of intention must give an estimated date of expropriation, or as the case may be, an estimated date from which the property will be used temporarily, and also state the estimated period of such temporary use, and F, the estimated date on which the expropriating authority was in possession of the property. Okay? So, let's just remind myself, and then hopefully collectively, the expropriation and taking possession are not the same thing. There's ownership, expropriation transfers ownership, and possession is when you actually move in. They may happen on the same day, or they may be days or months apart for a variety of reasons. One good reason why they might be apart is the farmer has got a crop that hasn't been harvested yet, for instance, to take that example, and therefore, although the ownership transfer, you may want the not to take possession, for instance. I mean, that could be any time. So there's a pretty big time. What we think here is that even at a stage of intention, so the expropriation might not happen, it's important that some indication is provided in the notice of intention as to when the expropriation will happen. Or the temporary position, because there can be temporary use in the case of an urgent expropriation, as well as also an estimated date for the taking of possession of the property. Just as if there's some guidelines and perspective. So at this stage it's all hypothetical. It might not happen at all, and obviously the thing might prove to be more complicated than both parties realize, and therefore the estimated date. But just so there's not a notice of intention to expropriate, and then no action or no attempt to move, no guidelines provided. So, but what it does is also then an expropriated entity or an entity targeted for expropriation can have access to the court to say, the issue is this intention to expropriate. Nothing is happening, nothing's going on, etc., etc. We're left in a very compromised position, for instance, as an example. So we brought that in, and we think that's what the committee was asking us to do as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Mr. Fritter.
Thank you, Chair. Again, the concern is about the choice of the where estimates date. My understanding is that you would estimate something that you can quantify. I know colloquially we would refer to an ETA, estimated time of arrival. But I think in a piece of legislation, perhaps the better choice, so I think, would be to say the intended date. It sounds better, from a put it that way, rather than estimate. Because you don't count dates, you count days. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fritzen.
Yes, okay, another time. It's a friendly name for once. So we're happy with it. That's not for once.
Thank you.
think it was tabled last week. It's basically to remind us that should he or she be expropriated, it's not a done deal that it will happen. So that's just a small thing. Then turning to page 18.
Ek het net gekyk na die kyk na die nommering op bladsy 17. Ek dink dit is vanaf punt 5 en gaan daar begin hoor by bladsy 17. U en hier, dan is daar 'n hele ding mekaar skool. Ek verstaan dit nie. Misschien kan hulle dit net verduidelik. Dan raak dit hier 3 en 4 en dan is daar A, B, C en so ek het opgelet dat Jefferson gebruik die alfabetiese letters en dan gaan ons oor na die Romeinse letters toe. Op plaatsie 16. Nou as ons op plaatsie 17 kom, miskien kan hulle van my verduidelik aan ons, gaan U hier, en dan is daar A weer. As dit anders moet is, dan moet dit ingekeep is. Dat altijd onder die hier moet val. Verstaan ek wat ek daar probeer verduidelik?
Baie dankie. Wat ek probeer vraag, ek is seker is hulle insiens media.
Yeah, it's something I forgot to say right at the beginning, that obviously we focus on the wording of and rewording, and what we haven't had the time to do is to go through and just make sure that the enumeration is in order, and cross-references also in particular. However, in this case we think we are not guilty, as complicated as the things are, okay? So if we're looking at page 17, basically, these are the terrible protocols of legislation for which we are not responsible. But basically, sub 3, about 5 lines down on 17, is a new sub protocol. And then it's got an A and B underneath it, and then 4 becomes a new sub clause, it's got its own A and C. And then the Roman numeral subsumes beneath the alphabetic listing. That's the convention. But you're right to remind us that time we talk to the state organs in particular needs to be meticulous, and they are, about making sure that the numeration is clear and makes sense so far as any of this stuff makes sense.
Okay.
Particular owner in this case. So
and publish such notification. Okay? Thank you. Then at the bottom of the same page, a slight change just to keep things alright. If the appropriating authority decides to appropriate a property, the appropriating authority must hold the notice, so again, notice, of expropriation to be served on the owner and the known holders of unregistered rights, as the case may be, whose rights in the property are expropriated. Okay. Because it would be unfair for the expropriating authority to be held liable for not sitting at if that information is not known to them. There's the onus on both parties, but particularly on the owner of the property, the main owner of the property, to also disclose unregistered rights. So at this point in time, that information might not be available, so we shouldn't have it known. Okay. Although already there's the obligation to investigate, if I'm not mistaken, unregistered rights owners. But it might be the fault of the expropriating authority that unknown rights holders, unregistered rights holders.
Thanks, Honourable Witness, followed by Honourable Dyke.
Thanks, Chair. I understand the intent of this assertion that you do not want to, unreasonably obfuscate the expropriation act that might be necessary. It can come an endless problem. There's a difficulty that I foresee, particularly in part of the legislation with all the clauses that were referred to, also refers to land reform. One of the problems with land claims and the rights to land is the difficulty in determining exactly who has rights. Now, does this particular insertion exclude the right? Let's say there's a property gets expropriated and someone was missed. Does this clause exclude future land claims to be, or claim rights in land to be made at a later stage? And I see a potential problem arising here, that it debates the rights that are allocated to people in other parts of legislation. Especially if, for arguments that window periods get extended, there's a potential conflict that I foresee.
Thank you.
Page 18, that Roman 3. Not to proceed with an expropriation or problem with the choice of that article N rather than say B, because we're referring to a particular cause of action here, not any expropriation. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Well, he abandoned the chair of the suit. But game break is it. Okay, we'll certainly look at the whole end. In regards to the Honourable Walters issue, if the Honourable Walters could just look at clause 10 on page 23, and particularly 10 sub 1. Honourable Brooks.
Yes, the Chair, I see that and I understand again the intent behind this, and I think it's trying to make practicable expropriation practicable. Again, how does this impact, how does that impact, for example, the land plan process had to be reopened? What had to happen with claims like that after an expropriation or after 50 days? Yes. I don't actually, what I'm pointing out, and we might not come up with a solution right here, but is there a conflict, potential conflict in a government legislation, a restitution act, for example? Is there a potential conflict here if for argument's sake, let's say the former district 6 actually utilised for a public purpose, what had to happen if further land claims had to come to the board? And that is happening all the time. In fact, that's one of the difficulties that we settled. So I'm flagging it as a concern because I see the potential here for expropriation taking place, something happening that might be for a public purpose. We of course have some issues with public interest, public purpose, but then a conflict arising, a further problem arising between two bits of legislation that will become difficult to resolve and it really could nullify the intent of this. So I see a potential for conflict here that I suggest we look at. I'm not suggesting redraft the entire order of the clauses, but it's certainly something that needs to be looked at. And I think it's a comparative exercise that needs to take place between different bits of legislation. Thanks.
Okay, very quickly, we'll look at it, but off the cuff, well, not off mic, but off the cuff with my advisors, who have some experience, at least one of them has quite a bit of experience in the space of land claims and land restitution, is that there wouldn't be a conflict, but it may well, in the case of the District 6 example that you're using, it may well attract monetary compensation after the fact. But it wouldn't be a conflict, you know, if it was unknown, unbroken, and some expropriation goes ahead for public purpose or in public interest, and then subsequently it turns out that although there's a big fat nuclear power station in District 6, there's still outstanding land claims, that would be entitled to presumably the compensation, if they can prove. So that's my understanding, yeah? Okay. But anyway, that in any case has taken us to the next minor issue, which is we've changed it from 20 days to 30 days, within which such a person should bring evidence of one kind or another to substantiate the claim. So we're on page 23, 10, sub 1, which just changed it to 30 days, because sometimes it can be quite complicated. Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. We just also picked up a wobble. So it's the fourth last line on page 23. We talk about for water affairs and sanitation, not for water and sanitation. So let's just call it water and sanitation, not cut affairs. Okay. That we haven't lost. But just to take your advice. Okay, turning the page to page 34, we've added in writing, I don't think we've had, was it last week? I don't know, but anyway, just make sure that it's in writing, the information, so that's straightforward. Okay. We're now on page 29. but I try to make sure that I have it. Within 20 days of delivery of the statement contemplated in 14 sub 1, inform the expropriating authority of the decision, in which case the provisions of section 21 apply. Okay, and section 21 deals with mediation, all going to court, okay, on the compensation. What we're proposing is what's in yellow there, actually. And I think it's reflected in, just double check, it is that we carry it over rather to 21, where it belongs more naturally, on page 34. So we'll get there in a moment, and I see we have now carried it over. So we're proposing, let's strike out, let's just refer this point to section 31, section 21 should say, put a full stop there and knock out what's highlighted in yellow, and carry it over to section 21. What's highlighted in yellow, but played in 21, we'll explain how we do that, or where to do it, when we get there. Okay. So the text in the first step?
Yes.
Sure.
Thank you very much. That's paragraph 3. Within 20 days of delivery of the statement contemplated in section 14.1, you read it so well, I couldn't resist one thing. I'd already decided to suggest that we have a comma after 14.1. Inform the obedient authority of the decision. You read in the comma, but it's not there. And then, civil honors. I don't know. Whether we can practice the writing of Italian expressions, not Italian, Latin expressions in Italic. This is ordinary, writing, just to show the, whoever is reading the article that this is foreign language, and this one is written in Italic. I consider maybe outrageous. Thanks.
We will have a deadlock on the comments. Thank you for liking my information. The let's come to, because we've transcribed civil owners in foreign language to section 21. All languages are foreign, should I? Okay. Especially in South Africa. So let's come back when we get there. But we don't necessarily disagree with the language. Okay. Page 30. So instead of saying, what's being proposed here, instead of saying compensation comes payable on the debt on which position passes, we say no, by no later than the debt. Okay. We've corrected the grammar, which it has, and in particular it's not done half a good. That's under sub 2. And again, we have by no later than. Not less than 80%. Okay.
Moves to chapter 6. Okay? And colleagues will remember that chapter 6 has now become mediation and determination by courts. Okay? And urgent expropriation and so on have become separate chapters. Okay, so at the bottom of page 33, what is the new sub-1 becomes if expropriating authority and expropriated owner or expropriated holder do not agree on the amount of compensation, they may attempt to settle dispute by mediation, which must be initiated and finalized without undue delay by high party. Okay. Introducing, as we'd agreed to, the possibility on mutual agreement of mediation. Alright. Then, sub 2, if the expropriated authority and claimant are unable to settle the dispute by consensus in the matter contemplated in subsection 1, this is the mediation process, or if the claimant did not agree to mediation, the expropriating authority must refer the matter to a competent court to decide or to just an equitable compensation. And here we've brought in the foreign language. Provided that nothing in this section shall change the ordinary civil onus on the part challenging the administrative action. Okay, before we come to the language, let me just try and explain what we're trying to do there. So what we've been advised to, I think we all like the idea of a proactive expropriating authority if the mediation doesn't work when it comes to compensation. I think generally the committee likes the idea, and we do too, that the expropriating authority should then proactively take the matter to court, the compensation matter. However, what's pointed out to us is, what does it take to court? Because as far as it's concerned, there's no case to answer. Okay, it's gone through the process, it's paid compensation, there's no case to answer. So that's why we've added, so we still want the proactive process. Essentially what happens is that an expropriating authority, when there's no agreement on compensation, the expropriating authority then, as it were, establishes the court, provides documentation to the court, but the onus, and we can find different language here, the civil onus on the party challenging the administrative action rests with them. They've got to make a case, or decide not to make a case, but it is with the court, and the court that is familiarized with at least the state's perspective on the process that happens, and documentation and so on. So we're trying to, as it were, square the circle a little bit. But it's a curious, in court practice, it's a curious thing where the party that feels they've done the right thing nonetheless opens up a case. So that's how we're trying to do this. And we'll come to language, we'll try and find sort of more perfect language. But that's the challenge we're trying to address in sub 2.
Thank you, Tim. Tim, my question is that this clause, in your review, there is a difference on the compensation amount, but it does not deal with the matter whether the expropriation is justified, whether it is in terms of public interest or public purpose. So shouldn't we then, because I'm in the process, shouldn't we then at least say at subsection 1, where it says it's proposed to not agree on the amount of compensation and add in there or the reason for expropriation?
Thank you, Honorable.
Chair, I recall some of the previous arguments when a similar point was made, but I also would prefer, you know, rather than reference to another section, and you know, I would actually prefer that to be in this clause as well to avoid again 20 years from now misunderstandings in this regard. I think I hear what the Deputy Minister is saying, but one can also argue, and I'm not much of a legal technical argument here, but I think one can argue about who goes to court and under what circumstances, but the point is somebody disagrees with the expropriation, they could also consider say, well, there's no problems, expropriation is unjustified, but I'm not the one having the problem with the expropriation approach. So I do think what Member Brunhoff is saying, I do think sister, I think if a dispute about whether this expropriation should be taking place or not, I think it's also desirable for that to go to a mediation exercise, because otherwise, you know, this is going to be essentially a series of court cases then arising rather than purposeful mediation and people finding common ground and moving forward. So I would support that proposal.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Okay. We think we're covering, we don't want to write in mediation for every aspect. We're not precluding mediation, okay? But we think we're covering the general issue in sub 3, which immediately follows sub 2, qualifies sub 2. In other words, subsection 2 about when it's a dispute on compensation, subsection 2 does not preclude a person from approaching the court on any matter relating to the application of the Act, and particularly obviously we have in mind administrative justice, and we also refer you to what has been added over the last couple of weeks to the preamble, going all the way back to the preamble, where specifically we refer page 3. So direct reference to section 34, which is about administrative justice, essentially. Okay, there is section 34 because everyone has the right to have any dispute that can be resolved by the application of law decided in a fit public hearing. Or a court called appropriate, another independent and impartial tribunal or forum. So that would also embrace the mediation possibility. Okay.
I hear what the Honourable Deputy Minister is saying, that there is a difference in this sense, that if you look at subclause 2, the initiator is the appropriation authority. In subsection 3, and even if you go to page 3, then the initiation will have to be initiated by the claimant. And that makes a difference. Because if the expropriation authority takes the initiative, then they have to go through the legal processes. And now in the case where the reason for expropriation is in dispute, then we say no, then the claimant must initiated everything, and I disagree with that. It is the state who wants to expropriate. They are willing to take a legal initiation when it comes to the compensation now, so why not as far as the reason is concerned?
Thank you, sir. Parliamentary advisor, any view on this?
Thank you, Chairperson. My comment would be in respect of subsection 2, if I go back to the discussions of the committee, subsection 2 is seeking to deal with specifically section 95.2b of the Constitution, which refers specifically to the issue. Remember, we're discussing the issue where people just have to approach the court and the issue of court and all of that. Then that's when the committee brought the issue of either mediation or arbitration, all of that. So that is the issue that specifically deals with compensation and the amount of compensation. I think that's where maybe that's what we need to unpack, because we are trying to bring a measure that's more, that is mediation, that's more accessible to the people. So I don't know, but I think just for me, I'm looking at subsection 2 to section 25.2b of the Constitution. So maybe we need to unpack that more. I think that's where there's a little bit of confusion, because subsection, this section is more or less giving a little bit of need or accessibility in respect of, that is, we need to read that with section 25.2b of the Constitution rather.
Thank you, Madam. Honorable Shalini, followed by Honorable Walters and some of us.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're going to have this problem throughout this bill, especially when we're debating close by close. Because what we have done is what I questioned on, or suggested last meeting, that this mediation, this clause, now what we have done, we have narrowed this bill as if it's a bill that only talks to the issues of compensation. It's an expropriation bill. That's why the suggestion was that, even mediation, because the issue here is that before we even get to the agreement of how much do we pay, what do I do in the case when there's a dispute that, because the reason for expropriation is first for public interest. If I dispute that from the onset and say, municipality, you want to expropriate this for public interest, but I don't believe that and I want to dispute that. This bill doesn't allow. We kept on that is saying, no, you must be able to close this and this and this. And to simplify this, because now where we have the confusion is where the mediation is only narrow things on basis of the issues of payment, on saying how much the issues of we argue whether the compensation is correct, is right or not. Which to me is to say, let's not go that direction. Let's just talk to the mediation of both bills, whatever that might be on dispute. Even we can even have a dispute in terms of when are you going to pay, 80% and 20%. That still can be argued to say, no, if we are appropriating my land, I want my money all upfront, not this 20% and 80%. So this should be dealing with this kind of mediation on payment overall, but not to be selective, especially when we agreed that we move on the premises that this bill is subject to section 25. Now what we have done here, we have taken a certain clause between the subsection 25 and we want to and put it up front, and that's what is creating the confusion. So my suggestion is still saying, let's take out the issue of compensation and everything. This must be mediation, as by the theater or whatever, on the basis of whole people, that you might be able to, if there's anything that happens throughout the whole process, even the issue of letters, because now we're talking of when is it going to be delivered, 20 days, 30 days, I can't say no, I was not there, 20 days that you're talking about, the difference to where do I go in terms of this bill for mediation, because even that, it's a valid fact that I can put and say, the days that I was given, They're not enough. The appropriating authorities say, I gave you 20 days, I'm saying 19 days. And I mean, we need to fight about that. Because this is, it talks a lot of issues. So mediation should not be narrowed only to the issues of payment. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Jamini, thank you, sir. Next was Honorable Walters.
Chair, I think that the whole issue of mediation arose when we were thinking of the person that doesn't necessarily have access to the resources to go to court to fight expropriation. That's where it started. I also think the very nature of mediation is trying to find common ground, you know, where presumably people agree on how expropriation will take place. It might even include what part of the property gets expropriated, what part of the property does not get expropriated. So I do agree that it goes forward on compensation. I think compensation, obviously the money is going to be important, but I think compensation is going to be part of it. But I would suggest, and again, the kind of thing that I think support needs to go into, I think a clause that includes if the purpose or the manner of expropriation gets a challenge or disagreed with, whatever the wording is, there should be a section looking at the action. Then if you look at the preamble there might also include a wording there where we say for a court or where appropriate another independent impartial tribunal mediation structure or forum. It could also include wording on that side. But I think I'm not picking up the principal disagreement. I think that what it's about is ensuring that again that it doesn't become a fight between people with the resources going to court and the taxpayer money versus people with the resources. I think we should think of the small property owner or somebody with rights in land that might get negatively affected, and then that's what the intervention was about earlier. The freedom of a previous meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Jalabara Srunga.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let's give an example. I mean, when we talk about expropriation, you have two main issues here. The reason for the expropriation, and then if there's a dispute, who's really going to bear all the costs? All the costs. And let me take an example. Let's take the community of Ring of Mark, for instance. It's not a very rich, it's a poor community. Now, the government decides to put up a power station on the Ring of Mark. Now, they come to the community and say, listen, we're going to put on this power station, and we're going to compensate you for this amount. Because the way this clause is putting it, now, yes, they say, no, we do not agree with the amount. But they can even start to say, but why do you want to put up the power station in Ringfast Park? For instance, you can put it in other place. It's more accessible to more people or whatever the case may be. So there's a dispute whether the purpose of the expropriation should ever take place. And that's my argument is that the way the clause is worded now, it only says that the expropriation authority in the case of a dispute on the amount takes the matter to court. And it's a simple. That's my proposal, that if you include there, or the reason is in dispute, I mean, then the community or InfraSmart, now they say, well, we don't have a case. If we have to go to court to dispute the reason, you say, no, we go to court and say, but this is not the best place to put up the power station. It's going to cost them a lot of money, which they don't have. But the way this clause is worded, it just says, well, it's your problem. You want to go to court, you can use Section 25 of the Constitution, it's your full right, but they don't have the money. Only in the case of the dispute of the amount, then the law says, the expropriation authority, they must go to the courts. And I think that's okay. It should be a bill crisis.
Thank you. Honorable Sundarvast.
Have you joined a...
Okay, that was an interesting discussion in which surprising parties align themselves with entities of race relations. Okay. Let me explain. First of all, let's bear in mind that the proactive move that we're introducing in terms of a failure for the mediation to have them to work, there's a compensation challenge. So we've agreed, although it's awkward, for the expropriating authority to table the matter, as it were, in court. But today, as far as we can see, there's nothing wrong, but here's the court. The expropriators party will still have to, if they want to take up the case, because it's open to space, will still have to pay lawyers. So the Ringfast in this case of compensation, the Ringfast community would still have the challenge of paying for it and maybe run the danger of the costs being ordered against them. If it is a wise judge to understand that there is an inequity in terms of resources and so forth. But so it doesn't avoid the cost issue, enabling opening up the way. That's why the mediation route is the better route, obviously. But I'm glad that in terms of administrative justice, because that's what the intent, the reason for the expropriation, or the process through which the expropriation was handled, did not conform to the
the legislation that we're trying to work with, the law of general application. Those would be challenges not on competition but on administrative justice, essentially. That there was a failure to administer justice, the process of expropriation, because it wasn't for a public purpose or there was a better alternative or whatever. We can't and shouldn't, and that's why we've written into the preamble, and we've also written here, in sub 3 and sub 4, that the compensation issue that we're dealing with specifically here doesn't preclude access to the court for other reasons, and particularly in terms of section 31 of the Constitution, administrative justice. Okay. But we don't now want to write into the law a law of application, a complicated process where at each step, which is what the Institute of Regulations was trying to do, which you won't find anywhere in the world, before you spray paint, you've got to go to the court for the court to decide whether you as an expropriating authority, you're allowed to or not. I mean, this is nowhere in the world. That is the cases that we've studied. So you can't cover what Section 25 of the Constitution requires, which is that in the public interest or for the public purpose, the state must have powers of expropriation, like any other state must have powers of expropriation. Okay? The powers must be exerted justly and equitably, and our property clause said there must be some compensation as well to be determined. Okay. So we, apart from the language, okay, let's look at whether there's not better language. We want to stand up firm, obviously I answer, to what we're dealing with here. We're not making this all about compensation, but we're dealing with the specific issue of compensation at this point. Okay. We're not preventing and can't prevent people from going to court on other matters. But we can't expect the same at every point, at every turning point to say, we're going to the court for the court to decide whether, or we're going to mediation to decide whether this is really the public interest or the public purpose. That completely hamstrings the DA provincial governments from expropriating. It just doesn't, and the courts would also see it as an active interference into the separation of power. The state must be able to act, but the court must be able to assess, whether the action is conforms with law and with the Constitution. So we're very confident, Chairperson, that apart from language, as I say, that can always be good. But the structure of what we're trying to do here is the balance right between access to the court and ability for the state to exactly the same. You think we can do that?
Let's start with Honorable Lamini, followed by Honorable Sunagas.
Thank you, Chair. So we remain as a member of our subcommittee directors. You are saying, just from your statement now, that according to the law, the state has the power to appropriate wage members. So, if that's the direction that you're taking, so why do we even bother to put mediation and all those things when it comes to government? Why the state even doesn't have the power to decide how much I'm going to pay? That's the finish it up. Because that is the direction. If you say on one side that the state has the power to expropriate without even giving them an opportunity to dispute that, because that is the issue that we're dealing with here, to say, yes, the state has got the power to come and do that. But you must give me an opportunity to give my reasons or say why I don't believe that, because this is on the basis of public interest. Because if that issue, then you say there is no negotiation, then it's my issue. Because the state can't select it on saying, well, am I going to join you in terms of agreeing to go to mediation and all the issues. And for me, it's running about who can afford it. The issue that the state cannot be selected. If the state wants to say, I've got the power to do it and you've got no recourse on that, then in this sort of compensation, then the state must just say, I've got the power to tell you how much I'm going to pay you. And then the case ends there. But you can't be selected on these two issues. That's why I was saying that this, fantastic, what we've done here, we've just narrowed this bill into part of Section 25. Which the whole thing is the bill is based on, the whole Section 25. So once they're picking some areas of Section 25 and want to deal with them, let's not make others more important than the other. The whole Section 25 is important when it comes to this deal. So we can't be selective and take some areas and say this one is more important. The whole Section 25, including the issues that deal with racial issues, what happened, and all of it. Everything on Section 25 is important. There's no law that is more important than the other one. Not unless I'm reading the Section 25 in a wrong way, but for all of it is important, so it can't be selective and say, no, because this one of communication takes is more important than the other that are written on Section 25. I don't believe that is the way to go in dealing with this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Chair, I agree with the Deputy Minister that nowhere in the world do you have, when it comes to expropriation, legal processes to give the reasons and everything. But we must remember that we, in a certain sense, are dealing with a whole that's a bit unique in a certain sense, in that we have two reasons. Normally, globally, expropriation laws or acts is for public purpose. And I think public purpose is quite clear. I mean, if you want to build a road, it's for public use and public purpose. But in this book, we have a second definition, namely public interest. And we must remember, in the submissions we received, quite a lot of institutions said that it's a wide definition. And that is where the problems can start. When it comes to expropriation. And much as I said, there's a makes a difference if the expropriation authority initiates the process or where I have to initiate it. The difference is as follows. If the expropriation authority initiates legal process, let's go back to the Cosmos, then the process will give them time to say, listen, this is the process, but now we can go and say we need some legal aid to do it. But if the onus is on the community of infrastructure to follow the legal process, there are certain time frames. Now, they want to go to court, they have to initiate it, but it will take time to get the legal aid. So by that time, the time frame will start. As far as they can't do it, whereas if the expropriation authority, if they started the process itself, legal process, gives that poor community the chance to try to get legal aid, and of course in the end there can be a cost order from the from court, but it is favorable to poor communities when it comes to legal costs, and the legal process is the expropriation authority starts that or initiates that process, and that's why I still stay with my viewpoint that we should also include the aspect of the reason for the expropriation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Member, Honourable Sayer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the Deputy Minister seems genuinely perplexed about the insistence to also be able to question or to take to court the principle of the matter, the reason for the expropriation, not just the amount of expropriation. And I kind of want to help him out to explain him or make him, maybe he'll understand better why there's such a strong feeling that this first step should also be subject to compensation. You know, we operate in a level and a political environment of, yeah, but we operate in an environment of low, political environment of low level of trust. So we have to take that into consideration. Then second on that, there's the reluctance or the refusal so far by the department to actually define property. The minister simply said it's not confined to what is the word here, property is not limited to, not limited to land. That's it. So it could be anything. And then in contrast to that, public interest defined, but very wide, it can include anything. Well, so property could be anything, and public interest could also be a very wide range of things. So that gives the state a lot of power to compensate almost anything in the interest of public interest or for public interest, and then you have no, you can't actually challenge that or take this report only when we get to the amount. So we're going to take it, whether it's, you know, for whatever reason, we can only fight about the amount of money or the amount of compensation. And that's the reason for the strong feeling that the reason for the expropriation could also be subject to a possible court procedure.
Honourable, I'm not objective at all. As I can say, there's every right of an of someone who is going to be expropriated or might be expropriated to approach the court in terms of reviewing, assessing whether the reason for the expropriation or the method that has been followed in terms of the expropriation is valid or not. It's constitutional and it's legal in terms of what we define. So there's no specificity about that. Okay, so that's the first issue. But let me then go to the Honourable Member Lamini. You see, what is different about compensation to other issues? Because I agree with you, the whole of Section 25 is relevant and must be relevant, absolutely. No dispute on that matter. I'm going to be guided by that. And it includes public interest, unlike, okay, some parties would seem to have a problem with public interest. It's a constitutional requirement. A compensation challenge, and that's why, which we haven't got to, a dispute, if you look at sub 4 on page 34, a dispute on the amount of compensation alone shall not preclude the application of Section 9. Okay. Section 9 is about expropriation. Because we know from the evidence, from the submission made by the Hedson, for instance, that they're deeply frustrated that they're putting in transmission lines and two or three property holders speculatively hold out against being bought. In this case, they still have to go with a salary buying approach. Because the principle is the quicker way of going. And so there's huge cost to the state as a result. So what we're trying to do, one, is to give the state confidence that it can expropriate, can already, in terms of an unconstitutional piece of legislation, like the 1935 Expropriation Act, unconstitutional in some ways, but in terms of other provisions, the state and different spheres of the state can expropriate. Okay. But it's not an unlimited power. It's limited by the Constitution and other bits of legislation. So the state has and must have, in terms of the Constitution, expropriating powers. The property clause gives expropriating, constitutionally acknowledges the right of the state to expropriate, but and then there's certain conditions that limit on that. There must be compensation, etc. Okay. So the reason why we pay attention to compensation is it doesn't delay expropriation. Expropriation, there has to be compensation paid. What we're saying in the law is at least 80% of the compensation must be paid on expropriation, on possession, taking possession of the property. At least 80% of the final offer from the state, but there's still a pending challenge, okay, and we're trying to address how that challenge should be met. Any other challenges would follow the normal course of court challenges, okay. And I've advised the Honourable that if the state proactively opens up a case, which is curious because it's got no case against itself, again, in room 5-1, they would have even less of a deadline, only 15 days to respond, and therefore less time to find legal aid and so on. So it's better that they proactively decide to trigger the process in terms of time. If the other party triggers it, I'm told, by counsel, it compromises them further. And the costs would still go to them. Well, there's probably legal costs, and how costs are awarded eventually by the court would be a matter that the courts would decide on. Okay, so it doesn't avoid the problem of a poor community that gets expropriated and battles and short of socialism and having no poor community. We can't solve the problem of poverty and access to court through this legislation or that expropriation. my health is beginning to solve the problem, and I'm now spent from the legislation in front of us. I'm trying to appeal to a colleague across the energy jacket on this matter.
Sorry, Jim, but can I have an explanation why we say that they will have a shorter time? Because I differ from that. Because if you appear in court, yes, you will have to appear there. And you ask the court to give you a chance to get some more legal aid. Of course, the court will be more sympathetic towards you. So please explain me that you have, will have a shorter time.
15 days to bring your application and 20 days to repeat. If the case is in fact to
appear. Okay, you can bring in your application, and in that application you can ask the court, say, listen, I also want more time to ensure that I can get more legal aid. Then it's for the court to decide on that.
Just a second, once you sort out approaches to the court and the relevant age involved, the next in line was Honourable Walters, followed by Honourable Sammy.
Chair, I'm just concerned that we're losing sight of the original reason why this fit, the way I recall it, why mediation came in. And I think we need to bit about access trying to avoid a long, protracted, costly court process, and at the same time protecting rights to progress vis-a-vis rights to property. I think we I'm not saying it's not useful, but we must solely look at the arguments about various ways of interpreting the Constitution, and I think Clause 25, that's very nature, leaves space for applying it to a particular context. And so it can become a bit of a, I'm not saying it's not, we should have that debate, but I think we can lose sight of why we had this origin. And I think the question really in front of us to me is whether over and above compensation, I'm happy with that section, I think we thoroughly debated it, but over and above compensation, whether mediation can play a role in ensuring a better constitutionally sound, more effective way of managing it. This is what the question is for me. And in my mind, if mediation makes it easier for somebody with rights to property rights to go to a mediation process, which avoids a costly court case for both the state as well as for affected parties, then it's a good thing. If it complicates, if it creates a situation, obviously I'm on the side of the individual citizen, then if it creates complicated, then I think it's a bad thing. If it can advance both the efficiency of this legislation as well as the making constitutional rights of people over here, then it's a good thing. So I would actually suggest that we re-look at the section that we have, where we made some progress in terms of mediation, working that in, but I think it's maybe a case of again looking at reformulation. So seeing how I can re-accommodate this. So I've made some specific proposals in that regard previously, I'm looking to repeat that.
Thank you. What have you said?
Thank you, Chair. One of the challenges where you're sitting, we're really reminded that part of your responsibility to try to be a spin doctor. When things they're not even going that direction. Now, my question to you is that we agree that on this page there are two key issues. One is expropriation itself, to say I'm expropriating. We deal with that one, the second one we say is a discompensation measure. Now, on this bill as it is, we agree that those two issues are quite critical. Now, when I read the bill, as an ordinary person, the villages, when I've got a dispute in terms of the compensation that I'm repaying, I can go to the bill chapter and say, okay, these are my this is how it should work. But then, say, if I've got an issue that even this appropriation is not, according to my understanding, it's not institutional, then this bill is saying I must refer to some other clause, because it doesn't specifically, because if we're looking at this compensation, that is answers those two questions, because anyone wants to get the letter that there's going to be appropriation. Those are the two things that's going to happen. And the proper that I have, the government has to take here, it's a legal right, that, or a constitutional right, or it's a law that the government must do it. But the issue is that now, they take that, the second one is how much am I going to pay for this purpose. But now this bill is selective, because when it comes to compensation, I can go straight to chapter 6 and read, okay, this is the direction that I must take. But now when I dispute the issue of the land, bill is not clear. The response that I'm getting is that you must refer to this section and read with this other section, with other section, and that too is an issue. That why is it difficult there? If that is the issue, we start bringing to say, if you were dispute whether the expropriation is correct or not, this is how to deal with the issue of mediation or taking it to court and all those issues. Then, that's what I'm saying, it's going to create a problem, because then we're going to bring everything that is on section 25 to 3. That is the history of the acquiring of the property and all those things. That is why I'm still going back to my suggestion that mediation should just be mediation of the whole bill as we are guided by section 25. Because my understanding is that we got this bill because we want to unpack section 25 in a more clear. Rather, actually, we shouldn't be, as I said, we have to have this bill. We should say, we have this appropriation according to section 25. One page, that's the case law. But the bill, we're trying to unpack. So, I don't understand when you say, no, we can't over-explain, and then it becomes selective. But if we're talking mediation that covers the whole section 25, then we can't be only selective on the issue of compensation, and we think that is more important than the other. That one, I don't support that thinking. Thank you.
Honourable Member, thanks. Honourable President.
Thank you, Chair. I'll go through two issues. One is the fact that about 2 or 3 sessions ago, we deliberated rather extensively, and the department agreed that it made sense to make provision for prospective expropriatives to have access to courts. And I see that I'm trying to draw the attention of Honorable Chairman to this. Section 3, clause 31, for the base 34 in blue. The subsection 2 does not preclude the person from approaching the court on any matter relating to the application of this act. And I don't know the time I respond to an urgent call. I don't know if the department hadn't specifically responded 15 minutes ago by referring to Mr. Sufikal to this, or whether perhaps it isn't a supplement with that. I'm trying to help the process to move forward. Not that I'm showing disrespect or his concern, but I'm just trying to highlight this. And I know that in the original text, there was no such a clause, there was no such provision. And as members of the portfolio committee were successful in persuading the department to have that clause. And it opens, therefore, an opportunity for anybody disgruntled or unhappy of any aspect of the application of this act to go to court. Secondly, this proposed key.
If you then, one day you'll be the chairperson. One day. Good folks, I do propose that we take tea for 15 minutes. Let's be back at 11:45.
Yeah, maybe one of that condition with the essay sort of trusting our idea.
Thank you.
But folks, we may resume. And thank you for the tea, because it helps us also to gather our thoughts a little bit. A general point, which one's been repeating quite a bit, I think it's very important to remember that there's not just two things that happen or that are envisaged to happen in this bill. In other words, one fine sunny day, an expropriating authority comes on and issues a notice of expropriation, and then there's some issue around compensation. The whole bill is very much about a process, okay, that's required in order to meet the test of administrative justice primarily, okay, as well as obviously, yeah, particularly that. So let's have a look at page 9, application of act. So that seeks to give some general guidance. At the bottom of page 9, application. So 2.1 says, despite provisions of any law to the contrary, an expropriating authority may not expropriate property arbitrarily or for a purpose other than a public purpose or in the public interest. Okay, that's really just a restatement for the founding principle. Then subject to section 22, and 22 is the urgent expropriation. A power to expropriate property may not be exercised unless the expropriating authority has, without the case, attempted to reach an agreement with the owner or the holder of an unregistered right in property for the acquisition thereof on reasonable terms. Okay? There's a requirement to show that it wasn't just you woke up the expropriating authority one day and said, right, we're going to expropriate it. That even before we get into the investigative phase, which you have to show that you apply your mind as an expropriating to establishing that it really is kind of property that you require for the public interest or public purpose, whether it's zoned in other ways, all those things, then the notice of intention, which is another process of engagement with those intended to be expropriated, requiring steps, the deadlines on both sides and so forth. Hopefully the deadlines are not too long, but all too short, that they become unreasonable. Only then does a notice of expropriation. So there's a prolonged process, not technically of mediation, but of engagement. Okay, so it's not arbitrary in that sense. I understand that in a caucus in the Tibet, there was an indication that we could look under, on page 9, clause 2, sub 2, to introduce something, subject to section 22, how to expropriate property may not be exercised unless expropriated without success, which may include mediation. Okay, we just need to check with state law advisors and so on, and we'll come explain the reason for that. But some indication that there needs to be an attempt, which may include, for instance, mediation. Okay. Then, of course, just to remind colleagues, which I think we've already done today, on the preamble, which the Honourable Tommy again referred to. I think those were before he talked about tea, he talked about two sections of the bill, and that one was the preamble, where a section says that on page 3 at the bottom, where section 34 of the Constitution provides that everyone has the right to have any dispute that can be resolved by the application of law decided in a fair public hearing, etc., before a court and so on. Okay. Or another independent and impartial tribunal or forum and so on, okay? And then it's also on page 34, section 3, which really picks up the same point, that while compensation challenges follow a particular route, other challenges to expropriation are not excluded. Essentially, that's the gist of section 3, okay? Now, specifically on the issue, which is why I said, which I think the Honourable Walters and particularly the Honourable Quinnebaugh were raising, which is, if we're going to introduce the possibility of mediation by mutual agreement for compensation, why can't we introduce it for other points in the process, or to tell us the points in the process?
Okay, I'm going to start off. Functus officio. How's that? That's interesting. Okay. I'm now reading
generally. It, okay. It sounds like a sophisticated term for poetry.
Okay. This is entirely redesigned. Okay, basically what it is disputes on administrative decisions to expropriate are not amenable to a mediation. Okay. Dispute resolution, in other words, to dispute resolution by consensus. Because once the authority has made its decision, it discharges its statutory power and becomes functus officio. Only a court of competent jurisdiction may then invest the authority with the same power to make a different decision, whether or not, for instance, to expropriate. Okay, so that legalese. But the point is, if I understand correctly, is that the pajar acts by the executive challenged in terms of promotion of administrative justice can't be submitted to mutual consensual resolution, because that opens the door, and apparently this is law and established law, that opens the door to the state acting arbitrarily to make decisions, to carry out the thing, in other words, to issue a notice of intention to express that, let's say, and then to go into mediation about what it's acted. So it could then, from one day to the next, act in an arbitrary way. So I'm told, in terms of functus officio, that mediation is not possible in terms of a pajar. Recourses to court, recourses to other things are possible, but once the executive authority has exerted its functus officio, it's mandatory. Once it's done that, it can't then go into mediation and say, well, okay, sorry, I'm reversing it. The reversal can only happen through a court process. Okay. So that's the technical explanation. So we're not really, let me underline this other time, access to all some other matters besides compensation. But once an executive action has taken place, it's no longer accessible to a mediation challenge between the two parties. Okay. Okay, I'm getting 6 out of 10 from the council behind me here for my attitude. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Now that we're talking about matters that could take us to court, it's unavoidable to think of the potential costs that come with court processes. This section 4 allows a prospective expropriatee to go to court on any matter whatsoever. Now, on the other hand, the state could, with the intention of frustrating the whole process, raise the issue of Section 65 and say, prove to us that you've got the money to go through this whole legal process. And accordingly, I want to suggest that we bring in a new section or subsection here that stops the state from raising Section 65 exception, so that people do not have proof to the respondent's government that they have the funds to go to court. This may be the case with indigent people, this may be the case with their communities who would need a lot of time to raise funds, and actually be able to raise money, you know, on an ongoing basis. It's a new thinking there, at least, but I think this is the time to bring it in. Thank you.
Listen, I will accept the principle of the functus officio, but that is when it comes to mediation.
But then we should change the wording that we excluded it from mediation. But still, if there is a difference of opinion on the reason that the expropriated body still initiates process, we can excuse the mediation, because that is what that principle of sunt pisificio is actually mean. But okay, that's my view. It seems we're going to agree that we disagree with this.
Chair, as I said earlier, I think it's really about call it access to legal recourse. I think that's one aspect of it. And then, of course, not unreasonably encumbering the state. And I think that's the type of balance trying to find. I think the suggestion under section page 9 and page 10, Application Act, I think that definitely takes us forward in terms of creating a potential mediation as to public interest and a specific purpose. I would imagine such language would be something along the lines of such a thing should include where reasonable should include mediation, some phrasing like that. I think one would like to see what it looks like as well. And I also think we mustn't lose sight of the point that Honourable Member Groenewald made earlier. Yes, governments across the world have rights to expropriate. Yes, there's a need. There's certain instances expropriation takes a democratic society forward. But the public interest definition, and I've expressed my discomfort with this earlier, I think it does go back to the point that the member made. It is not the same as necessarily expropriation legislation in other countries there. So I would certainly like us to look at public interest and go to a clause by clause, or whenever the appropriate opportunity exists, that we do look at ensuring that public interest definition that it absolutely corresponds to clause 25 and everything in clause 25, and we make it there is no grey areas there whatsoever. So I think this takes us back in sense to the definition of public interest. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Honourable Janine.
Minister, I'm just looking at that way of you presenting us, that page 9. But then if page 9 cover the issue that one is for the right to go to court or dispute anything, then why do we have this section, this chapter 6 there? Because it should, even the compensation or anything else, it should be covered by that there. Because my issue that why do you think to give preference to this compensation issue? Because if you're saying the issue of the dispute in terms of whether the expropriation is correct or not, it's covered another. Then why we give so much preference on this, the part of section 25, rather than to say then it's covered there. Then if you've got an issue of whether the compensation is correct or not, go to the act as you referred us to page 9. Because I still haven't got an answer from your side or from the department to say what gives this compensation priority or importance as compared to other clauses of section 25. So I can be maybe answered on that, and then I'll understand because I don't. Thank you.
Siabonga, Baba Jamin. Me, Mathias, Udabua, Mojadish.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think initially the issue of compensation was treated the very same way as in page 9. There was no mediation about it. We requested that we should include the issue of mediation, and that is why we are having chapter 60, because we requested that it must be included. And we are only talking about the compensation issue and not the rest of that, because that one is covered there. But we said, let us also include this one of compensation so that we try and make the issue not very expensive for our people, especially those who are from very disadvantaged areas. Thank you.
opportunity for a rejoinder. Honorable Samini would like to add to his previous contribution.
Thank you, Chair. I have from the normal next to the honorable member in terms of saying that was on the basis. So what are we actually saying with this thing? Is that if this bill is informed by Section 25, are we saying there are clauses that are important than the other? Is that the direction we are taking? So that as we move forward, we know what we are dealing with. Because if we got a directive on what is important and we take it as its own charter, then we head into a lot of other problems with this thing. If that is the approach, because from what I'm getting is that yes, everything is covered, but if I have compensation, it has to be given a reality status that must have its own charter. And that cannot be correct. The Constitution must read it as the same, Section 25, everything that is there. It's important, there's nothing that is more important than the other in terms of those Section 25 cases. So if I can be clear, thank you.
Honorable Walters.
Thanks, Chair. Look, I don't want to get into a debate about compensation. I think the different ways of looking at it philosophically, I think to me it's a fundamental part of any expropriation debate. But I think the difference is, in terms of what we're talking about, is where in the process the type of mediation takes place. I think your mediation about party purpose, public interest, whether it's the desirable life should take, that is part of the beginning of the process, the earlier chapter or sections of this act. Something like the compensation in terms of the process ends up towards the end of the process. And that's why I accept the point. It's very difficult to conflate different sections of the expropriation process into one chapter. And that's why also I think the proposal made by the Deputy Minister of looking at mediation at different sections of the Act, looking at the bottom of page 9, top of page 10, the application of the Act, and that try to deal with it there, because then it starts making, we start unbundling the debate, we start breaking it up into sections that we can actually deal with. But I hope that helps. I think the issue is about whether mediation should be taken up about everything. The question is more to me where we break down mediation and where we insert it into different parts of the Act. And I think maybe that can help us to understand where we go better. Thanks.
Thank you. I don't think there's a substantive, there's like maybe substantive issues of a philosophical kind, and then there's the detailed issues.
I think on detail we're
not far apart at all. What we want to indicate, and something that work would need to be done between now and next week, is that we will consider specific exclusions of states entitled to request security for costs. It's in the rule 49, apparently.
Okay.
So we'll look at that. Because again, we're not unsympathetic to the point that you're making, in particular cases where it would be. I think what in particular the colleagues from DA and perhaps from the Freedom from Sites have consistently signaled is that they have a problem with the way in which we're defining public interest.
Okay.
I think we should accept the bona fides of their concern. But certainly from the department side, we think it's very important to hold on to the definition that we've got, which we don't think is outside of the ambit of Section 25 law. It's very much literally taken from two different parts of Section 25 of the Bill of Rights, and I think it's very important to signal this thing. The Honourable Prunup is right today that this is a difference with many other countries or most other countries. And exactly so, because it's referring to the very specific reality of South Africa. The Constitution deliberately refers to a terrible legacy of dispossession, essentially, and the legacy of it. And that's why there's a reference to public interest. So we think, but we can understand it for whatever reason there's concern there. But I think that's one of the issues where there will be a difference, certainly from outside. I can't speak for the ANC here. For the EFF, but I would hope that we would have support for retaining a strong reference to public interest.
Okay.
That's the nature of politics. Just to see, I think
I would really disagree about the likely with the Honourable Dameen. The whole bill, every chapter, is dealing with the entirety of Section 25 of the Bill of Rights. Okay? Because, first of all, it says that there must must have expropriated ground for public purposes on the public interest. Secondly, it says that no expropriation can be arbitrary and must follow a general law of application. There is no law of general application. So what we are trying to do is write a general law of application in line with Section 25. How should it proceed? Okay. It then goes on to say, well, we're all familiar with what it says. It defines very briefly, public interest in two places. It talks about compensation and says the different criteria that must be brought into bear when compensation is being assessed, and it's not just about market value. And all of that is embodied in what we're doing here. Critically, what we're trying to do is provide confidence, especially to the state, because what has been happening in our view, and we heard that strongly from ESCOM, is that all from, well, we didn't hear from them, but you know, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform pay exorbitant amounts of money for land reform or land restitution purposes. And we think it's because they're nervous about proceeding with expropriation, or not necessarily expropriating, but having the power to expropriate it well and clearly defined, so that, willing sellers become a little bit more willing, or unwilling sellers become, understand that if they're continually unwilling, the state has constitutionally power. So that's what this bill is very much about, okay? But at the same time also telling all the citizens of South Africa that although you can be, any of us can be expropriated, but we can't be arbitrarily expropriated, unlike in some countries that are not necessarily a million miles away from us. It has to be legal and constitutional. And so it provides certainty and guidance to both citizens, property owners in South Africa, as well as to state entities. And by and large, I'm not wanting to specific issues, by and large, in fact, even as we speak today, things that end up in expropriation, by and large, basically the agreement is settled, okay. Which is why we say in the law, on page 9 at the bottom, subject to section 22, where there's an urgent expropriation, a power to expropriate property may not be exercised unless the expropriating authority has without success attempted to reach agreements with those targets. So long before getting to this process that moves towards expropriation, you would also need to show that you've attempted to do that in an expropriating authority. Not a one sunny day. Okay. So I'm sure I'm not convincing the Honourable Tlalini, who thought there was too much said in the chapter, I think it's chapter 5 on compensation. And I think that the committee, generally speaking, found it important to talk quite a lot about it, because that's often where things become complicated and it needs to be clarity. So we've kind of added mediation into that chapter, which did exist before there was the mediation issue. So in short, sorry, that was an unintended longish speech. We will look at Honourable Sultani's concern around the state's entitlement to value, and you really meet the costs. And we'll find wording for that, and we will do that before next week. So when, and we will consider looking at a reference, which is to make sure that we don't fall foul of functus officio. We will look at page 9, the bottom 2, sub 2, which may include mediation or something to that effect. We can't say much because functus officio could come in different cases, but we will promise to look at it. Okay. So I think that as on the philosophical, on the broad issues, there's possibly no agreement, and that's okay. But on the details, the couple of detailed issues, we undertook to do that, because we're subjected to the next new project. Thank you.
même si elle a les tocs là pour que l'humour ou à la fin.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I was also thinking about the issue of public people with some of our honorable members. We are not very much satisfied with it. Maybe they if they can come up with a definition which they feel maybe it could be suitable for that, so that we look at it as to whether it could suffer. Thank you.
Chair, I think we all agree that whatever we do is should be constitutional. I think clause 25. I think in principle, on paper, I think we all in a sense agree that most certainly I think let's attempt the formulation and we'll always something let's see where it takes us. But something occurred to me as the deputy minister was speaking. Just the example, I happen to serve on the committee. Just the example that you used of willing buyer, willing seller, people holding out, to in a sense exploit the situation. I must say it's not happening, but that has also been abused politically to place an argument as if that's in fact the reason for land reform not succeeding. I'll give you an example. I've recently dealt with farmers who are more than willing to sell to government, and in fact I don't think it's exorbitant amounts either. But because of, frankly, that particular department's incompetence to close a sales agreement, what tends to happen, it gets drawn out. Because farming operates in short-term insurance, short-term lending, inevitably the farmers are going to want more and more because they're running at a loss because of the delays caused by government. And I think the fear, particularly in a land reform context, but I imagine it's applicable to other areas as well, is that its essence will become arbitrary. A state that is failing to do what it's supposed to be doing jumps to expropriation as an excuse for not doing the job in the first place. And I wonder whether we shouldn't maybe look at under clause 9, application of the Act, maybe expanding orbit, our definition, exploring what we mean under the term arbitrary. Now I would imagine inserting maybe words that not on the next imply, but we might want to strengthen it. Behavior, if it must be as far as reasonably possible, or reasonable and enduring. I think that the nightmare scenario that I think in the minds of these people are if expropriation takes place as a result of a failure of government as opposed to achieve objectives of government. And I think that is a balance that I think we need to try to get to this act. I think all agree we want an act that works. We want an act that takes us forward. That regardless of losing government, will stand the test of time. And I would suggest that we might look at stuff. Let's look at what arbitrarily means and whether we want to strengthen that aspect in the legislation. Thanks.
Thank you. Robert Amin.
I think we're still going to get to this issue of connotation and everything. But it would be wrong for us to start suggesting that we must bring our own definition on this bill. If this bill is on the basis of Section 25, that's a constitution. That's what we must follow. We can't bring our own definition, suggestions, and all those things. Obviously, the issue here is the issue is of expropriation. But what I find difficult to understand is, especially on the ruling party, when there's issues that suggest that because the defenders of the land, the issue here is always saying the government cannot do this. And that is the only argument that no, it's because the government is got weak, there are loopholes and there's weak administration processes and all those things. And by accepting that we are playing to the hands of those that they want to pay for things that are not supposed to be there in the first place. And it's not because even ANC, or the MPs, they agree that the government is weak. So I don't know what informs us. Because that is the issue of saying, why are we even talking to this issue of observation? Why do we even agree going to that direction. But since we are not there yet, the issue that we can't start bringing our own definitions in terms of the bill. Section 25, and we're going to be free as how it is, and not unless we are saying then let's debate in the issue of the Constitution. And then I don't think we are there yet. But as it is, that's how we should be able to move. Thank you.
Honourable Member, thank you. I've noted that you, Honourable Walters. I'm glad that members are very articulate in regard to their views, and I don't see anybody feeling tired and feeling this meeting. Everybody is very much awake. Yes. Honourable Walters.
I would like to propose, I just want to say I think it's up to us to be able to legislate this. We're guided by the Constitution, provided the framework of the Constitution, we can come up with definitions, we also can't have a situation where we don't submit one matter because it could lead us to other debates. You know, that's not the purpose of legislation, and obviously there's issues where we agree, and I think the point of being in Parliament is you end up agreeing to disagree on some matters, but it's in the interest of all South Africans, every single political party represented in this Parliament, to try to find an act that works for everyone, that takes us forward. I think one of the reasons we're having this discussion is because we're trying to have a foundational debate that takes us to the society forward. And that's where we are coming from. My specific suggestion on the application of the act at the bottom of page 9. And the chair, please, I'm also guided to, I'm not jumping the gun to a future session already, and if I'm out of order, please indicate so. Despite the provision of any law to the contrary, an expropriating authority may not exercise expropriate property arbitrarily or for purpose other than a public purpose or a public interest. I would like to sort of suggest a clause there that refers to reasonability, that it's based on empirical evidence, and I would suggest wording. I'm just trying to find the right section in the sentence. May not express the property arbitrarily or without empirical evidence, or for a purpose other than and the rest of the wording stays with us. I think we there needs to be an obligation that it's not the political wings purely determining expropriation. It is something that is purposeful, that is based on evidence, and that is a quality we should attempt to take us forward. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I would also just like us to remember that in terms of the Constitution, if you look at 25.1, no one may be deprived of property except in terms of law of general application, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. Deputy Minister.
I guess that it's going to be in the face of where we agree to disagree. Sometimes I'm not sure what it is that I'm even disagreeing with, but I tend to disagree. But leave that to one side. Just in terms of the officer's comments, basically arbitrariness could refer either to an arbitrary process, not respecting the procedural fairness in terms of the culture, or to the arbitrary substance, okay? The absence of sufficient reason behind any preparation in this case. So we're reluctant, we hear what you're saying, but we're reluctant to try to achieve that in a couple of lines, with a couple of word phrases at the bottom of page 9, application of the Act, because we think that a great deal, in fact, the body of this bill is all about defining procedure, what would be a procedurally fair process, okay? It requires, and in terms of the substance, it requires the investigative process, the intentions expropriate notice, all of those require also what you're calling empirical evidence. It requires expropriating authority to go investigate. It requires
offer the notice of intention. It requires also the expropriated entity to come, expropriated entity to come forward with documentation, argument, in other words, empirical evidence. The same applies obviously to people without, who have unregistered rights and property, required to produce, well, there's a requirement on the expropriated authority to seek to discover if there are any unregistered rights in the property. There's an onus also on the registered owner also to make available any documentation. So the whole bill is trying to deal with, to define what is not arbitrary and to provide basically a platform from which a court or for the expropriated authority or the expropriated entity, all of which a guidance on what isn't arbitrary, what is just and equitable. So rather than try to, we understand what you're trying to do, but rather than try to kind of get it in, squeeze it in an application of that, we think under application of that sufficient just to say, must be arbitrary, okay, and also requires an antecedent process of attempting to negotiate, and not proceed with expropriation. Then we spend a great deal of time as we're expanding on what non-arbitrariness would be. So we hope that please go through the bill and see whether your concerns are met, because we won't meet those concerns. Because we think that it's better, I mean, not in alignment to, but substantially throughout the bill.
Honourable Workers.
Chair, I cut the point there. I've got flags of concern. I think it boils down to state incapacity not in itself being an excuse for expropriation. It must be towards a purpose to achieve something that betters. I think that's where you're coming from, and we might politically disagree on it, but we're concerned that that is in fact that the act will be abused in that manner. We can debate that, I suppose, but we will pick it up as we go through the ruling, but that we'll be putting it on the table as a concern about.
Thank you.
Hopefully we now we're on chapter 7, urgent expropriation, and I hope urgent is also a technical share in this hearing. So really on page 36 is a minor adjustment. Instead of the court may subject substantiated reasons being provided, we say on sufficient caution of the expropriating authority, extend the period of empty usage. So we're improving the language in the first bit of blue then. And the second bit of blue we've added just to provide the hint that what we don't want is, yes, an urgent application, we suddenly find ourselves in 100 years of war, God forbid. The urgent expropriation might need to be extended, or the catastrophe, the disaster, whatever it might. But only a court can do that. But we don't want to be endless repetitions of urgent in regard to the bank property. So that you're just using the urgent thing as a device to actually expropriate in the normal way. So it could be for temporary usage. There could be, we create the window of opportunity for a court to decide that the urgent expropriation can be extended for temporary usage. But if the 100 years war, then we possibly have to go the route of a normal expropriation rather than keep going back to court if the point is understood. Yes. Chapter heading in front of us, I just go forward. Let's change the chapter headings. Offences. The Honourable Sultani clause of the expropriation.
Okay.
We were still a little bit work in progress, which is why it's yellow. And let me just make sure I've got the right. I think I've got the right one. Okay. And let's just. Thank you. Okay, so let me, colleagues are reading it, but let me also read it for my own refresher. So 27.1, a person commits a breach of this act if that person fails to, and then there's a series of administrative type things, comply with the directive, deliver to expropriating authority of state, and provide the information contemplated in section 8.4. If a person, okay, and this is what's new, if a person commits a breach in terms of subsection 1A, D, or C above, an expropriating authority may, by notice to that person, impose a prescribed administrative penalty for the breach in question. The minister must prescribe the respective amount of administrative penalties that may be imposed in terms of subsection 2, and then 4, an administrative penalty imposed in hazing and paid in terms of this section does not constitute a previous conviction contemplated in chapter 27 of the Criminal Procedure Act, etc., etc. And then 5, a person who willfully, and then, was always there, a person who willfully furnishes false and misleading information, that fraud, that attracts a criminal penalty. But the others are administrative weaknesses or whatever, mistakes or failures, and can affect an administrative penalty, but not a criminal risk. Okay. Now, the reason we put it in here is we haven't tested this yet with senior counsel. So we might come back. For instance, under sub-3, we're making the Minister of Public Works responsible for basically regulating the amount. Is that advisable, or do we just leave it amended and so on? And if the minister is the right person, should it be in consultation with, or whatever the appropriate word is, Minister of Justice or whatever? So there are a couple of things that we want to figure out, but the body of what we've answered, we're trying to indicate that we fully agree that A, B, and C under 1 are administrative blemishes and not criminal cases. Okay. And the heading also therefore needs to change instead of offences, and we have not marked it, but that's something we're supposed to do, administrative penalties and offences, because it's not just covering criminal offences. Okay, so if we can ask indulgence a little bit, it would be useful to hear comments on whether we're getting there or not, but again, certainly by next week we will have, in the spirit of what is contained here, we will produce language.
Honourable Walters, followed by Honourable Sultan.
Thanks, Chair. I think we essentially have the framework right here. I think the only issue, and again, this is nitpicking, and it might be just worthwhile to add it into to convey the spirit of this. The only issue here would be a concern about the minister having exorbitant penalties. It becomes a punitive exercise, so maybe phrasing like that. I'm sure, again, one can go to Orton, but it might be necessary just to state right up front, the minister must prescribe the respective amounts of administrative penalties may be imposed in a reasonable manner, according to that end. And beyond that, I think it's, I like the framework.
Wonderful, for Danny, thanks.
Thanks, Master Speaker, Department, for taking time to accept the suggested proposal. It's just two additional elements. Yeah. One, maybe it should be stated in the regulations which we accept the minister, the range of penalties, that's what I was looking for. Rather than leave it until because somebody in the administrator could come up with an absolutely crazy, with penalties, so to speak. But I think if the regulations specify the range, so that even as you commit the offense, you have got an idea of what you're letting yourself into. Another element of it all is looking now at the consequences, so far as the interests of government are concerned, at the consequences of a prospective head of the G failing to comply. Now, do we assume that the department will just proceed as contemplated in the sections of just have dealt with, going to court and so on, because this is information that was required if my memory serves me well. Department said, we want to expropriate, we need this information from you. And when you do not cooperate, so to speak,
you are, in a sense, frustrating the process. What do we do in that case? Yes, currently you'll be punished administratively. Now, what happens in that case? You know, either in the form of further penalty or with the same proceeding and so on, that you might want to give us an idea of how government handles such situations going forward. Because I think that there would have been further reasons why government wanted to take this route in the first place.
You see, imagine the UDM being who controls the council someday.
Yes, yes, yes. Folks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue that you are dealing with here on number 3, on page 41, the minister must prescribe the amount of penalties and so on. Will it not be proper that we include it in chapter 2 also, so that it does not just come up there, while when we are talking about the powers of the minister, we did not include it there?
Thank you. Honorable Justice, Honorable Justice, I know that you are not feeling well today, sir, but I get concerned when you are sitting so far away from your colleague as if you are having Ebola.
I do not want to catch up with you by now, but that you have already connected me. Yes, with the offences, I will not bias when referring only to the offences by the person whose property is being expropriated, and not to the by those which may be committed also by the expropriating authority.
Thank you very much, sir. I don't want to say on that seat note.
On the last signal, we're just taking a little bit of advice. As we indicated to earlier, and in response to Honourable Walden's, who's busy booking his flight to London, we're not unsympathetic. So as I say, we reached to in a reasonable manner, and I think for Honourable Fatani, page of, I think those are the kind of details that we will look at in trying to perfect them. In regard to the answer of like deliberate frustration, apart from attracting a fine or whatever, does it hold up expropriation? So the answer I'm getting, and this was the one I imagined in any case, is no, it can't. So documentation is requested. The expropriating authority must exercise its mind in regard to the documentation in front of it, which might show that it would be unwise to appropriate for any number of reasons or whatever. But if documentation is held back, that can't be a reason to delay the appropriation. Must proceed on the basis of what's in front of it. And then, you know, the consequential things, if it was information about people with unregistered rights or whatever, if it was deliberately held back, that would attract a criminal case against hold back. If it was not deliberately held back, obviously there are remedies within the thing post expropriation to address that issue. So, yeah. And then, in regard to imbalance, which is what the signet intervention rate, it would have to be a way of practice to go. an audit compelled the state. Okay. Let us forget, by the way, I mean, this is just by the way, that the state often expropriates another part of state. That happens. Huh? So if you're assuming that it's state expropriating citizens, civilians, or private corporations, personality, or whatever, but there are cases where one wing of the state expropriates another for a public purpose or in the public interest. That's also possible. So it's not just a nasty state versus it's two nasty states, two nasty parts of the state. But I'm not being very agreeable as to what is really in public interest or the public purpose. Anyway, just an interesting that reminder.
On the basis of your reminder, Deputy Minister, I think there's a case in point where the Western Cape provincial government has been seller looking for property owned by RAS next to Kulambuke, very prime property. So I'm not sure how far they've gone there. City put forward compelling reasons why it needs that piece of land. And Prasa was hanging on to it by its toenails and fingernails.
The newest things that I've had developed. And so we've undertaken, I think there are not too many issues from our side, but there are I think two or three issues where we want to refine. And then I think the two or three issues which we've noted lately, in particular the federal driver, but all of us, two or three issues also which have been, we've flagged it in yellow where we still just need to improve. And then there have been two or three, I think, friendly amendments, basically useful amendments, or additions that have come from the committee. So we undertake, Chairperson, to address all of this to the best of our ability in time for next week. Fire the state law advisor, who now becomes the key player in this room.
Is there anything that you wanted to raise parliamentary legal advice?
Not at the same time, thank you.
Members, my understanding now, if I am clear in terms of the process where we are, right now we can go clause by clause in order to determine where we are in our understandings in regard to those clauses. There's agreement or there's disagreement here, and that would be the A list. In preparation for what the state law advisor would put in front of us, which is called the B version of the bill. Is that correct understanding, parliamentary legal advisor, state law advisor?
Yes, sir.
It's just, you know, the issues that we have covered, whether there's agreement or disagreement, is neither here nor there. That can be sorted out in debates by various political parties. But in order to empower the state law advisor, I'm also looking at the time. It's almost quarter to one. Can I get responses from members?
So, as the thing is that now must start
clause by clause, yeah. Fraud will be.
Yes.
No problem.
Thanks, Honorable Tamin. The issue is that if we start the clause by clause, one cannot assume that there will not be deliberate discussion and debate on each clause. So that would mean that I've got no security to say that will be done by 1 o'clock. The other issue is we have also made provision that we could sit after one, but then there's also the issue that a number of members, some of them are participating in the matters before the House, discussing the issue on corruption. And then other members who are not debating might want to be in the House in order to support or participate in whatever form in regard to that. So in terms of process, that's where I am. Shall I take Honorable Raya and I take Honorable Nini, Rutani and Masia? I had a space, I'm just taking this in your business to where we are.
Mr. Chairman, you've mentioned all the appropriate points, and I agree with that, and I think therefore we should adjourn for today.
The next was Honorable Lamin.
I'm agreeing with the Honorable Chair that so soon, because I think now we're going to get to the end issue, because this bill, what we have here, is what the department has brought to us. That's what we've been dealing with throughout. Now we need to be able to point out our view. So the time, and we're going to need the patience, because we still have to try to convince the department to amend this bill and put some other tools. So right now, maybe they are retired, we need to get them when they are fresh, and then we can be able to convince them. Thank you.
To replace Sophia Pages, you want to win your square as well. Thank you. Secretary Dan, French. I'll respond right away. Like they say, people forget. We don't want to waste any time. This was said to 1 o'clock, and then we can, if we do 1, 2 o'clock, that would time efficiently use. Let's say, thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Member Nema Siena Kabuan.
Thank you, Chair. Seeing that you are only left with 10 minutes, I was of the opinion that we go to the House and then we can start with the process of clause by clause at a later stage.
Thank you. I give the chance for Honorable Walters. He has a very, what's the correct word? He has a smile of a very naughty young boy. So share with us what you are thinking.
My reputation, please. Chair, look, I think we're going to debate whether we should adjourn until 1 o'clock when we're going to adjourn. So while I really think we should note Len Fulcrane, if you haven't seen him on the rugby field, he's for somebody that is, I don't believe your ID number, by the way, he's incredibly vigorous, somebody of his purported age, and I respect that. But I think we're going to debate until 1 o'clock whether we should adjourn at once.
Good talk. On this note of debating until 1, I must just say I'm faced with fruitless and wasteful extension. Lunch was organized. ministry department, so it seems this is where we are. Realistically, the next time we can meet is next Tuesday. Thank you very much, good folks. You are invited to a very humble lunch outside there.